Hello and welcome back to the Rebuild Podcast. My name is Gadi Notelovitz. I'm your host today. And while last week was salt and pepper, me and Ted Smith, today Cumin has returned from Byron Bay.
Ooh. Who was salt? Who was pepper, by the way?
Is it because of my grey hair or because we are of different skin complexions? I'm dark.
I'm saying me and you were salt and pepper last week because it was a two-man gig.
Mm-hmm. All right. Because I've got mad grey hair too for the listeners.
No, so I thought
that was a bit of a subtle shot.
I was not taking a shot at that. I would never do that. And then I was trying to think of a third spice. Is salt and pepper a spice?
I don't think we've got enough time to cover that.
But interesting that your head goes to cumin.
I thought it was an interesting alternative.
Yeah.
And that voice is Harrison Pullinger, who has returned from Byron Bay with nothing but a depression.
Yeah, I was happy briefly, and then when you're back into the swing of work life, it disappears pretty quick.
Absolutely. Whenever I come back from a holiday, I try and go camping. So when I go back to work, it feels like I just came back from camping opposed to like Europe. You know, when like we were saying before, when I got back from Russia in 2018, I was clinically depressed. I was sad as coming into work. I was like, I was like going to be a DJ. I was like, I can't work. I need to be traveling all the time and going exactly where I want to go. But if I go camping when I get back from a holiday, then go back to work, I'm just glad I had a shower, a nice rest.
So you take like an extra weekend on the back of
I need a holiday for holiday. A holiday. Absolutely.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's an interesting approach.
Hey. See, I shouldn't need that for a week up the North Coast though.
Byron Bay is a beautiful spot.
It is a beautiful spot.
Where would you rather be? Basketball.
Yeah, there was a bit of basketball on today. We're recording this on a Wednesday, and hopefully you will be listening to it on a Wednesday as well. Game 4 in the NBA Finals. The Lakers went up 3-1. We're going to talk about that right now, and we will touch on Doc Rivers ending up in Philadelphia. An interesting move in the NBA landscape. But yeah, we'll start with Game 4. The Lakers got the win. They're up 3-1 now, one win away from another NBA title, their first since, 2010 for the Lakers, and LeBron's potential fourth title. Game 4, I don't know, it was an opportunity for the Heat with Bam Adebayo back to potentially level the series, but you just felt like there was a bit too much of a talent gap at some point.
A massive talent gap, and as well as Jimmy played in Game 3, I think we all knew he wasn't going to be able to do that for a whole series. And the overreactions that we got from places like the Bleacher Report and everywhere on Twitter, which has just declared LeBron and Anthony Davis shacking Kobe 2.0 and Jimmy Butler is the next coming of Michael Jordan. It's too much. We had to know that this was going to happen, right?
Jimmy Butler has only done that once in his career. So to expect him to do it twice in 3 days, a bit much. But yeah, the talent gap is there for sure, but it was close with six to go. When Duncan Robinson banked that difficult three-point shot with 6 or 7 minutes to go, I think to tie it up or to get within two, I think the Butler on the next possession tied it up. I thought, game on. And especially when you're considering LeBron kept up jacking up those 29-foot threes. I was like, if anyone else was doing that, in the fourth quarter, he would be livid. It was, and even the callers of the game, they were just like, LeBron goes from a three. I'm like, from 30 feet again, and he's bricked it. Yeah, I thought the game was there for Miami, but the further it went, it just looked like the Lakers, that they were going to get it done, and personally, I'm kind of sad they did.
Yeah, I feel like Miami had to work so much harder for their to score the basketball in that fourth quarter. When you have LeBron and Anthony Davis at a point, it's just kind of simple. You give the ball to one of the two best players in the series and potentially in the league. It's interesting you bring up that kind of overreaction stuff because I feel like this series is in a way searching for narratives and we don't really have any like super exciting ones. Like we've got LeBron going for a fourth title, but it's sort of like in this weird context and this weird bubble. And the two teams don't really have any history either. So it's like it's hard to get super excited when it was the like a LeBron team against the Golden State Warriors. There was like history and there was rivalry, and this series kind of feels like, yeah, two very good teams playing a competitive series, but we're sort of like searching for what to get excited about. Is that fair?
Yeah, and I think we're also lazy in doing that search.
Mm.
Like, I don't understand why we're taking the extremes that we are when there are really interesting points that are coming out of each game. Like, you look down the stretch of the game today, LeBron is one of the worst fourth quarter free throw shooters in the league. Why are we not fouling him? Like, hack-a-shack has been a thing for years. You foul the bad free throw shooters. And when Miami could have done was slowing the pace and maybe getting back a few points here or there, have a go. Foul LeBron. See if he's going to step up and make the free throws. There's an interesting narrative.
Mm. We saw KCP step up as, like, the Lakers have sort of had this turnstile as for the third guy who steps up on the day. KCP had 15 points, 5 assists. His playmaking was unreal and super valuable to the Lakers. And then AD, I guess, on the defensive end had some big moments. He had that kind of game-sealing three-pointer, which is an interesting highlight just because there's defining moments in series and you feel like that three was quite a big moment, sort of like the KD three against the Cavs a couple of years ago where you're like, oh, that might have been the series right there. If we're looking at the 3-1 score now and we're thinking the Lakers are probably going to go on to win the title from this point, has AD done nearly enough to pip LeBron for finals MVP?
No, he went missing for 6 straight quarters. He was bad in game 3. He was bad in the first half of this game. He was still in single digits. He got some big blocks, but I would be pretty good at blocking shots if I was 7'2". What shits me with Davis, it'd be too strong, you know, it's hyperbole if I call him a coward or soft. But when he went down in early fourth quarter and the Heat go down, Tyler Hero sinks a 3-point shot, or they get a basket, I was like, okay, he looks hurt. Right, but then they blew the whistle. He had a sip of water, and he got up and he started playing well. I was like, "Are you hurt or are you not? If you're not hurt, get up instantly. Go back help on the defensive possession." And then I thought about it. Quite often, he goes down on soft contact. He's an absolute weapon, offensively and defensively. It's just sometimes his ticker ain't enough. You compare that to Jimmy Butler, who got a bad call on an offensive foul when Caruso took a dive. He didn't react at all. He just got on with it. That's why I think a lot of people have picked the Heat in this game, because they're picked with their heart. They like the way Miami play. When you compare that to the big dogs, the Lakers, always complaining, LeBron is the king at whinging, for sure. No one whinges more than him. And to stay on LeBron complaining when Tyler Hero got called on a travelling call, LeBron's spinning his arms around. I'm like, you put them down. You do not complain about a travel call, my guy. What are you doing? The goat of double standards. But, yeah, AD, a great player. But for me, even though I was just complaining about him, King is the MVP for sure, LeBron James.
Is that the one kind of, I don't know if you'd call it disappointing, but just an interesting facet to this Lakers postseason run, in that the Lakers have done a really good job getting through the West and now against the Heat. But we haven't really seen LeBron and AD against two superstars or a superstar that can really go with them. Like, the Nuggets, I guess, were the closest to having two superstars that might be able to compete. But, like, the Heat, their best chance is to just kind of, like, outgrind the Lakers and to work harder than them and to just be more efficient, but, like, to a level that we don't expect from them. We didn't obviously get the LA matchup. We didn't get Giannis through to the finals. Is this a little bit like we're still like eight, like as you say, like AD goes down, takes a possession off, has a game where he's not great, and it still feels like they've just got too much to actually be beaten by this Miami side? Or is that unfair on the Lakers?
No, I don't think it's unfair at all. And I think we're being a little bit harsh on the Lakers at the moment. It sounds like we're just bashing the crap out of them. But Vegas released their odds for next year's title chances, and the Lakers are the favourites. Like, how quickly have we forgotten that, I don't know, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant are still in the NBA? And the Lakers haven't had to verse anyone like that yet.
Yeah.
They didn't even need to verse Kawhi.
Who's the only team with two legit superstars? I suppose Ben Simmons got injured, right? But, like, I just thought about it as you're speaking. I was like, we've got to wait till Golden State get back up on their feet until they face two legitimate superstars again. Given the Clippers are about to be blown up and they stunk anyway. So
yeah, I mean, and as you say, this does sort of sound like Lakers bashing, and it's unfair to an extent because you can only play what's in front of you, and the Lakers didn't choose for the Clippers and the Bucks to bow out early, although it was a pleasant surprise, I'm sure. It's just, it's got that vibe where, like, Miami, to a point, like game three was, you saw what happens if Jimmy Butler plays like a superstar, but yeah, it's hard to expect him to do that every night. But yeah, like the Lakers have the two best players in the series. They have two of the best, maybe five players in the NBA. The discussion around Anthony Davis maybe being LeBron's best ever teammate is interesting, I suppose. He's probably the teammate with the highest ceiling, but it's hard to, like, really buy into AD the same way, like, you bought into Dwayne Wade. Because they're such different guys,
and
right?
Different personalities on the court too. Mm. Dwayne Wade wasn't someone that would stay down if he copped a bump. He had that Miami fight in him that we see in this current team as well. We spoke about it a bit last week. But, yeah, I'd take peak Dwayne Wade over peak AD. I'm not saying Dwayne Wade is a better basketball player, because what AD provides as a 7'2" who can shoot outside, that's hard to turn down. But Dwayne Wade also, he's in the chat for third best shooting guard of all time. And that's nothing to sneeze at. And it's so easy to forget about how fast that dude was and how dynamic he was driving to the hoop. But personally, it's just a personal preference, probably similar to why I've gone Miami in this matchup, because I just really wanted to see him win. And in terms of bash on the Lakers, I think that's what it is. We've just watched the game. I saw LeBron complain heaps. I saw AD stay down. And I really wanted Miami to win this one. So you're probably right, HB. A bit of bashing. And they're about to win the title, so why not be favourites for next year, you know? And we don't know what Curry and Clay are going to look like when they come back. Knee injuries suck for basketball players. And Clay, I think he's upwards of 30 now, right?
Yeah, he would be close to there, if not already there. I think Steph's 32 now or 33. So, yeah, they're, I guess, getting to the end of those primes.
HP's the coach. Who do you think is LeBron's best runner, mate?
I think Dwayne Wade, 2006, Dwayne Wade, and I'm just saying, like, in a vacuum as a player, I think that was almost the closest where you could say his ceiling could be Jordan, in my opinion. I was watching him just going, this guy is a freak. And he was a legit two-way superstar. You look at blocks for shooting guards, it's daylight around him. He was incredible on both ends. Very good rebounder for a shooting guard as well. I just don't think I don't think we as a fan have seen enough from Anthony Davis to go, this guy is one of the greats in NBA history.
He still puts out a performance that reminds us that the Pelicans sucked. He only made the playoffs twice at the Pelicans, only made it through the first round once. And then you look at how he performed in game one, game two, you're like, if he played like that the whole time, they would have went a lot better. He might still be in New Orleans because they had success while he was there, but then he put in that bad performance game three, bad first half, and it's like, you just go missing, dude. How can someone your size go missing? He had multiple games in this finals run where it was single-digit rebounds. Rondo had 7 today. A lot of it's effort, and when he goes missing, you question his effort.
And when you're comparing Wade and Davis, I think it's fair to say Anthony Davis's game fits better with LeBron. So if we want to say who was the best player, who was his best teammate in terms of an offense that could move forward, defensively that could move forward, I think it's Anthony Davis. But who the better player is, Anthony Davis is not in that chat, and I don't think he's going to be in that chat at the end of his career either.
Well, you can compare AD to Dwayne Wade, and then you compare AD to Shaq, because that's the, as you said, the narrative after...
I just can't.
Was it after game two that it started, that LeBron and AD are Shaq and Kobe?
Shaq would own AD in a matchup, though. Yeah. That's how you break that down. Who'd win out of those two? Shaq.
Mm.
All the time.
All the time. It's
Pick that all the time.
You know what? Let's just continue this bashing a little bit. Is anyone else so over the do it for Kobe narrative that the Lakers are trying to roll with here? So many people are saying that in the Lakers organization. You know who isn't saying that? Vanessa Bryant, who's sitting at home not caring about this at all. No one cares that you're trying to build this narrative around that. It's gone too far, and like, leave his name out of your mouth.
And until it gets done, right? Like, it'd be nice if it just happened organically.
Yeah.
Just to shout out once you've held up the trophy.
But every game, every time it finishes, we're saying the same things.
So funny how often we complain about sports media while doing a podcast for Sports Fed.
Yeah,
but it is. It's almost like you wish there was a tipping point. The sad thing is that there isn't. It will just, you know, these hyped up narratives in an effort to catch a few extra eyes is just what it's all about at the moment. But I think you're right, man. It leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's face. A bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. Sorry, when you're using his memory midway through a final series in an effort to get up. When you know you should get up anyway. You got the two best players on the court.
It's 3-1, and it looks like things aren't going to go the way.
So perfect if LeBron loses for me.
Yeah, but I guess it's worth discussing Jimmy Butler at this point, obviously leading a team that looks like they're going to fall short. But has he done a character revival similar to Chris Paul? I mean, I guess Chris Paul was more that he just wasn't very likable, whereas Jimmy Butler was, he can't be that guy on a team. I guess this might end up being proof that he maybe can't be that guy. But how do we view Jimmy's postseason, his finals, and being the best player on a team that wants to compete for a title?
Well, this is my hope anyway, that a lot of general managers will look around the league at superstars or former superstars or just very good talents who are in troubled situations and be like, you know what? Friction can create fire in the best environments, and maybe Chris Paul needs to be in a situation where he is a loud voice in the locker room of a guard-heavy team, which he can just like share his skills and push everyone to be better. Maybe Jimmy is actually the ultimate leader. You just need guys that want to win, not want to cash a paycheck. And maybe this is something where we can look at and go, okay, what does Russell Westbrook become? Because he's someone that's been troubled. This could be a rebirth for the troubled superstar to be like, you know what, if we're going to invest in a superstar below market value, let's build a team around him.
Well, in regard to Jimmy Butler, did you guys see that report? I forgot who put it out, which is bad by me, but it said that Jimmy Butler sent a text message to the coach and it was about how Ben Simmons should play in an upcoming match, and Ben Simmons didn't react well to that. But you put that kind of dude in Miami where that they'll use that information. You know, the coach is respected enough, whatever he says goes, even if he's getting information off, the most experienced guy on your team outside of Dragic. But Butler's been in more bigger games, I guess. So, you know, I don't think Butler has changed. It's just that Miami has provided an environment for us to see the best Jimmy Butler. And that goes to what you're saying, HP. It's all about the position these players find themselves in, right? Are they in a good environment? Like, the best version of Paul George we saw was that outside of that one season at OKC was him at the Pacers, where he was the clear alpha dog. I think that's it for a lot of these players. Miami are in the finals because they've given Jimmy Butler the keys to the car. And it's not going to work in every situation, but, you know, it's a bit of luck, right? These players need to find the right situation for them, and when they do, they can take your team to the NBA finals, or they can surprise. You can have a surprise season like OKC did. They had no chance to make the playoffs this year. That's what we all thought. That's what everyone thought. And it's good, man, to mix these things up. Like, I like Jimmy Butler more this year because he was at the Heat. I like Chris Paul more this year because he was at the OKC. And moving forward, it'll be a matter of, do the GMs have enough cojones to make these kind of moves?
Well, and I think it's something that needs to filter into the draft as well, because one of the knocks on Colin Sexton was that people aren't going to like him because he's just a dog. Well, sometimes you need that, maybe Ja Morant goes to New York and it's not the same, but he went into a situation where all these young guys want to run with him. And apparently Tyler Hero and Bam were both like 4 a.m. wake-ups working out. That's perfect for Jimmy Butler. There is a world where we can sit back and go, okay, yes, they lost. And if they had have won, maybe it's a complete reset of the NBA like the 04 Pistons were. But they lose. Maybe a general manager can go, you know what, we only need one star, but we need to put him in a situation where everything that's good about him is going to come out. I think it's the same with Golden State. We've seen that for years where Draymond Green would be useless at a lot of other clubs. So many dominoes that can fall. And I think for Jimmy Butler, it's I hope it's a reset button for how a lot of GMs build their teams.
It was super intentional. Miami went and said, we want Jimmy Butler. We want him
and his attitude.
Yeah, we want him to be the guy that leads us. And I think that's super important because teams get into that free agency period where they have plans, but then they settle or the plan A doesn't come through. Ooh, okay. And then they go, well, we'll just go with this guy. And it's like, well, that doesn't quite fit, does it?
Even Kawhi, dude. Like, you look at Toronto's team last year before they were crowned champions, you looked at that entire roster differently. If you compared that roster to this Clippers iteration with Kawhi as well, in a vacuum, you think that Clippers team is better, right? But for whatever reason, they didn't build that correct environment where it made enough of the players happy to advance that roster through to the finals.
Talking about that Clippers team, Doc Rivers was obviously let go by Los Angeles and I think 3 days later ended up in Philadelphia. The reporting around this is kind of interesting because it seemed like Philly had settled on Mike D'Antoni. He was a day or two away from signing on to coach the team, and then Doc became available and they very quickly changed their mind and went for Doc, which is, for me, a weird contrast because they're two coaches with very different systems. And, like, what's the actual plan in Philadelphia? Was it to just let whatever coach came in?
Pick a better coach than Brett Brown and hope for the best. Is pretty much it.
You're right, but Mike D'Antoni represents such a system change. It represents a complete makeover.
And sliding doors, dude.
You're like, a day away from signing him and you end up with Doc Rivers. And it's like, okay, fine. But as we were just talking about with superstars and free agency, like, is there a point to the acquisition or is it just a name?
It's the exact same thing with the players, with the draft. It's when you pick best available over fit, I don't think it always works. I think Doc is the right choice compared to Mike D'Antoni. And what Doc, whose whole process is very mental, like be smarter about how you play, what he could do for Joel Embiid, I think could be really, really important because we were talking about it in their series where they got swept against Boston. It was Embiid seems too dumb to figure out how to pass out of a double team. How to play when a defense is like built around stopping him. That's something that Doc Rivers could really help him with. That's not something that D'Antoni would.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sliding doors there. Because if D'Antoni goes to the Sixers, I'm not saying he would have got rid of one of their superstars, but I think it was much more likely with a D'Antoni team in comparison to a Doc Rivers team. Like, I don't think Doc Rivers will blow this team up. I'm only saying that because D'Antoni hates tall people. And their two best players are over 6'10". So, but you know, the world is like, what have you done for me lately? And Doc Rivers has to come back with not much. Like, he won a title in 2008. That was the last time he made it out of a conference. But we'll see what he can do. He went up against some pretty red hot teams in the West. Was either getting knocked out by the Spurs or Golden State. So that's understandable. And you know, you're talking about the effect he'll have on Embiid. What will he do for our boy Ben? You know, hopefully he can – I don't know if Simmons needs what's up with Simmons? Does he need an attitude adjustment? Will winning just change the complexion of how we see this team? I mean, the answer is obviously yes with that. But, it's like something's wrong with Simmons outside of his shooting, but – we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Simmons had a really good year last year. He was a top 15 player, was on the third team All NBA third team.
Best defensive year too, I think.
Yeah, like the guy. Yes, there's an obvious flaw in his shooting, and that is something that he may or may not fix. He is still, at this point, a top 15 player in the NBA. Doc does have, I guess, some experience getting something out of a dude who wasn't quite as good as Ben in Blake Griffin, and that was Blake before he really had the jump shot going as well, the three-point shot at least. So, like, there's some reason to believe that Doc might be able to get a little bit more out of Simmons than Brett Brown was. As you said, sliding doors moment in the sense that, like, I think they're very lucky that they've ended up with Doc here, that the Clippers pulled the trigger as early as they did to allow them to change their mind real quick before bringing in D'Antoni. Because, yeah, whether or not he got rid of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid this offseason, the narrative would have been painful the whole year. Because any time the Sixers would lose, or if they went on a couple games where they didn't look quite as good as you might hope, the narrative would have been like, oh, Mike D'Antoni probably can't wait to blow this thing up, and what are the trade packages like, and what's he going to do, and how's he going to change things? I think Doc will hope for some roster tinkering, but he was also responsible for Tobias Harris in LA, and his 2 seasons there, I think he was under Doc, looked really good. Probably the best basketball we've seen him play. So there's a lot of reason for optimism, I think, bringing Doc in. As you said, he hasn't quite been able to get a team over the finish line. But in a way, I think he was kind of put in a pretty difficult situation this most recent year with the Clippers. Had a team before Kawhi and Paul George rocked up that was one of the hardest playing, best attitude. We're underdogs. We're going to fight. Righty, righty, rah. You bring in these two superstars who want preferential treatment, and you give it to them because you have to give it to them. And suddenly the chemistry in a locker room changes real quick. But I think he brings with him a lot of respect, both in the locker room and in free agency.
And the East ain't the West. The East has improved, but it still ain't the West in terms of getting out.
And you look at Doc Rivers' career, and he's done his best work with underdog teams. When he got his first head coaching job, it was in Orlando. They were meant to be the worst team in the league. They went 41-41, made the playoffs. He then went to Boston, where that team, even when they brought in the big three, I don't think they were meant to win, because they were kind of like, oh, Garnett's over the hill, etc. They did. Then when they were favourites, he lost. Went to LA. They were meant to win. He lost. And then he has that scrappy team in the Clippers after they blow up Lob City and looked great.
The David Moyes of the NBA. You like that one, Guardy.
Ooh, I like that. I do like that.
And maybe it's just something in the way he inspires the men under him, but maybe that underdog culture is something that he needs. And it's something that is absolutely, whether Embiid and Simmons buy into it, it's absolutely there in Philly. They are underperforming.
Yeah, it'd be nice if he could transplant that 2017-2018 mentality from the Clippers and get it to the Sixers. If you can get them playing like scrappy dogs, that would be great. Sixers still have a roster that says they can be great defensively.
Yeah, and they do still have a lot of questions on that roster as well, though. Like, Al Horford is still going to be a problem. Tobias Harris is still getting paid a lot of money. So he's got a lot to do. But there's no reason. They bought Al Horford in the idea that for 2 years they have a championship window.
Still not if Al Horford's there, though. There's the catch.
So what that roster looks like heading into next season, it has to change.
Yeah, it's been spoken about to the point where, like, if the Sixers don't go out and get shooting this offseason, I'm not quite sure what they're doing. That's like the biggest thing, right? Like, we know that now. I mean, we've always known that, but it seems like this offseason, Doc Rivers surely says, all right, get me some shooting so I can make this thing work. As you said, Ted, I think like their ceiling defensively with a coach that might be able to inspire a kind of underdog season where, like, all right, we're going to work harder than every other team in the NBA, let's do it, is a pretty exciting prospect. Like, I think this Philly team has the talent. They obviously have the talent. It's just whether he can make it work. And Harrison has ranted for years now about Brett Brown's inability to make Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid at least, like, at least to give them the chance to succeed.
It looked like the team with the best 1-2 punch in the East, which they have, right? Like, who else has two top 15 players in the East? Maybe Celtics next year, but Brown would have to take a leap as good as he was this season. You'd still take Simmons and Embiid over Tatum and Brown.
Well, you've got the coachless Brooklyn Nets.
Those two. It's so easy to forget because they haven't played in ages.
But they're player coaches, so I don't know if they count as superstars.
They have a lot to do.
I haven't met him, but he just seems like such a dickhead, Corey Irving. I mean, come
so
on, bro.
Does.
He just defends these positions, though, instead of like, being like, oh, maybe I misspoke. He doubles down, dude.
It's, we're talking about if you guys don't have context, Kyrie was on the Kevin Durant podcast where he essentially said,
collaborative effort.
Shout out to Kenny Atkinson, was a great coach, but Steve Nash is coming in and I feel like he really matches what we want to do in terms of having a coach who won't come in and put their own philosophy on the team, won't make us run at training or some shit, and then said, yeah, everyone could be a coach. There's not necessarily, doesn't feel like there's a head coach. I could coach one day. KD could coach one day. Not exactly what Brooklyn fans, I think, want to hear.
Not exactly what the future basketball players want to hear either. There's a chance they could get coached by Kyrie Irving.
Also, the comment, I finally have a teammate.
Who's clutch.
Yeah, can take the last shot. You're such a douchebag.
Dem's fighting words.
It is going to be very interesting to see what that Brooklyn team... Because I get similar vibes from that Brooklyn team that I did from this Clippers team this past year, where it was a team of guys who consistently overperformed. You got guys like Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert and Joe Harris, all these guys who have like really nailed a role for themselves as like really effective NBA players. And it'll be interesting to see whether they kind of take issue with the way Kyrie Irving seems to operate. Kevin Durant is a bit of a wild card. He's never been a problem teammate, really. He's kind of been a bit difficult at times, but like
he's a problem for himself, not his teammates, right? They all loved him.
Yeah, but it'll be super interesting to see what that dynamic is like.
The more we get to know Kyrie Irving, even though it's the only the media version we get to learn. The more impressive the Cavs title seems in terms of LeBron being able to manage that locker room, considering it had Kyrie Irving in it.
He seemed so normal though for a while there.
That's what I'm saying. I think that was because LeBron, he's the one that would take the presses after the game. He's the one that will have headlines for tomorrow's NBA story. I don't think. I mean, KD's going to do that, but for the wrong reasons, right?
Mm.
Burner accounts.
But I think that will do us for this week. We'll obviously wrap up the NBA season if it is done by next week, and then we have to make a call on what we're going to do in the off season. Maybe we'll do a few free agency specials if you guys are up for that.
Yeah. First time hearing of it, mate.
I was actually speaking to the audience.
Okay.
So, audience, let us know. If you did enjoy this week's episode, please leave us a rating, a 5-star rating, not a 4-star rating or a 3-star rating.
Even if you hate us, tell us you hate us and then give us 5 stars.
Exactly right.
Thank you.
And join us next week. But that will do us for today. Thanks, guys.